early morning fog I see, visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld from me, I realize and I can see.
Legendary Studios. Secrets and stories of our own French Abbey Roads. Story 1. Super Bear at Bear-les-Alpes, where Damon Metrobian realized his dream and Kate Bush recorded Lionheart. From 1977 to 1986, a young English musician, assisted by acoustician Tom Hidley and former BBC engineer John Etchells, ran a residential studio 30 minutes from Nice that attracted some of the biggest and brightest British musicians and bands of its time, including Kate Bush, Queen, Van Morrison, and David Gilmour, and handled production for Francis Cabrel. Most of The Wall was recorded here over an 11-week period, when Nick Mason parked his Ferrari Daytona out front, and a young sound engineer, Patrick Jeannot, who ran the show, witnessed some memorable recordings and domestic accidents, including one involving Freddie Mercury, who was bitten by a mosquito at Super Bear. Where does the name Super Bear Studios come from? 3 months before opening, we didn't have a name. Locals referred to it as Le Citer, its former name as the restaurant. My team called it The Studio, which probably would have been my first choice at the time. One day, I overheard a villager giving directions to a delivery driver, saying, Le Studio est à Super Bear, or something to that effect. Bear is pronounced like the English word for bear, the animal, and super is, well, super. In my mind's eye, I pictured a flying bear wearing a cape with an SB logo on it. I thought the name Super Bear was both original, memorable, and fun. Of course, we never used the flying bear in our logo, but it was composed of a crest with SB in big letters. Why France? Specifically, why Bear-les-Alpes? France was an easy decision. Firstly, I didn't want to set up in the UK due to the uncertain business environment created by the minority socialist government of James Callaghan. So it was always going to be an overseas venture. Secondly, British newspapers often reported that music celebrities, including band members and artists such as Elton John, Rod Stewart, the Rolling Stones, and Pink Floyd, etc., had homes in the south of France, an area often referred to as the playground of the rich. So I thought that if they have homes there, perhaps they would also like to record there. Clearly, I was right. How long did it take to transform the restaurant into the studio? There were two phases of construction. The first priority was to build the recording studio. As I recall, from the date I approved Tom Hidley's designs in March 1977, Eastlake Audio began construction in April or May. Tom Hidley worked on the design of the recording room. Was he someone you had already had a relationship with, or did you just go for the best man for the job? I placed John Etchells in charge of everything to do with the technical requirements of the recording studio. John was a highly experienced BBC-trained recording engineer with whom I had worked as a recording artist for a number of years. I told him I wanted the best designer in the business, and he suggested Tom Hidley. Choosing Tom Hidley was a no-brainer. How did you convince such major stars to come to France to record? Obviously, no internet and social media. Was it about knowing the right people at the right time and spreading the word through the industry as best you could? I believe it was a combination of word of mouth, the studio's location in the south of France, and the reputation we were building for our unique brand of customer service. For example, I knew how much record companies, artists, and managers disliked negotiating studio prices, only to be hit with a massive extras invoice for services, such as drinks, food, telephone, magnetic tape, car hire, etc. So I decided that Super Bear would have a simple all-inclusive weekly price, and only charge extra for either tape or alcohol, one being part of the inclusive deal. I also wanted artists to benefit from an environment where creativity could be nurtured, and work wasn't a four-letter word. In my opinion, this had to begin with food and drink. I also wanted our clients to feel connected with the nightlife and distractions of the Côte d'Azur. Our guests, including their roadies and friends, wanted to let their hair down from time to time. David Palmer, our public relations officer, ensured that everyone's needs were met. Most of the Super Bear team, including myself and my wife, Jo, helped to keep our guests entertained. One of the advantages of being in our early 20s meant we could party all night with the best of them and still do our job the next day. In all those years, our advertising was non-existent. Over the life of the studio, we only placed 2 adverts in the UK industry magazine Music Week. One was an advertorial in January 1978, just after we opened. The other, a full-page advert in January 1980. Why is there such a cloud of mystery around Super Bear Studios? Is there really a cloud of mystery? Or did I successfully achieve my goal? I know that the artists who recorded at Super Bear appreciated the low profile and the youthful family atmosphere. Of course, there are purists and serious fans who are particularly interested in the technical aspects of the recording process. They still contact me to this day. For example, asking which microphones were used to record Queen's Don't Stop Me Now, or what type of pickups did David Gilmour use on his Stratocaster while recording his first solo album. But a recording studio, especially a residential one, is so much more than technology. I recorded at a couple residential studios in the UK, and I didn't feel at home. The tech was great, the personnel lovely, but all I wanted to do was to get the job done as fast as possible and get back to my own bed. Something was missing, and I didn't want that for Super Bear clients. We had to offer something very special and break the stereotypical expectations of traditional recording facilities to be a location that artists sought out as a priority. Despite being unable to provide the luxury of a 5-star hotel, we offered a unique environment. Creativity was nurtured because we were flexible in our approach to how we would keep artists and their entourage entertained, fed and watered, both in and out of the studio environment. I believe that by keeping a low profile, the so-called mystery, we managed to keep our success formula a secret for many years, and that's why Super Bear thrived. From the second week after we opened our doors, and for the next 3 years, the studio was booked 6 months in advance. I believe that says more about the Super Bear phenomenon than anything. Why, after the studio burnt down, did you not rebuild or move somewhere else? Was it just time to pull the plug? Financially not viable? When Super Bear was destroyed in the forest fire of July 24, 1986, I was devastated. The house and studio weren't just a business. They were a part of my very soul, my raison d'être, if you will. Despite having my official residence in Monte Carlo, I preferred to spend as much time as possible living and working on projects at the studio. Sadly, no matter how hard I tried to get over the loss, the consequences of that day reverberated into the future. In fact, they continue to this day. Here I am responding to questions about Super Bear, despite it having ceased to exist almost 33 years ago. My whole life was Super Bear. You were very young when it opened. Did you have clear ideas of what you wanted from the studio? Though I was only 20 when I started the Super Bear project, I had every expectation the recording studio would attract the world's top recording artists and producers. The only question was how long that would take. Clearly, I had no reason to doubt the inevitable, and was pleasantly surprised when Pink Floyd's manager came knocking on our door only a few weeks after we opened. Richard Wright's solo album put us on the map, but I believe it was David Gilmour's solo album that opened the floodgates. Of course, I was still young, and my aspirations of a successful recording career were ever present in my mind. I had been a signed recording artist and songwriter in the UK for a couple of years before Super Bear. But despite writing and recording new material, sometimes with musicians and producers who came to Super Bear, my primary focus was to ensure the studio's commercial success. In fact, the studio was so successful, I couldn't believe how many bands I had to turn away. The Rolling Stones, Fleetwood Mac, Supertramp, being just a few. Okay, so we have The Wall by Pink Floyd, Lionheart by Kate Bush, Jazz by Queen, and so many other legendary albums recorded at Super Bear. Can you tell us about some of your favorite experiences? That's a very difficult question, because I honestly enjoyed being around all the artists who came to Super Bear. Some because I was a fan of their music, and others because they were such wonderful human beings. So I shall simply say this. I was humbled to have the privilege of working with some of the world's biggest artists, and shall forever remember their talent, creativity, generosity, and love. Let me reflect back to them in the words of Kate Bush, who signed our visitor's book with this message. It's become like a home, and we're really going to miss you all and the dogs. Thank you. Thank you for all your love, kindness, sunshine, and all the eggs. Your vibes and smiles are all over the album, so we're all in it together. Here's to you all, Lionhearts. God bless. You can find the complete tale in the book Legendary Studios, Secrets and Stories of Our Own French Abbey Road, published by Malpasso, a French company.
Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes.